Please get yourself situated and we'll get underway. My name is Matt Stinchfield from Plowshare Brewing in Lincoln, Nebraska. I welcome you here today to learn more about the OSHA Hazard Communication Standard and its recent changes on to conform with the Global Harmonization Standard. We'll get to our speaker in just a moment. I wanted to also let you know that I'm the chair of the BA's Safety Subcommittee, which is a subcommittee to the BA's Technical Committee, which reports to a few other committees. But we were founded last August. We have about 14 members in our safety subcommittee, and we are responsible for answering your safety questions on the BA forum under the Safety Exchange. We answer a question every Tuesday. If you're not a regular reader, we encourage you to do that. And also, while I have your attention, I'd like to tell you about a safety open house that we're having tomorrow from 11:30 to 1:30, from 11:30 to 1:30 in room 210. And we invite you to come on by, bring your questions. We'll have a good number of our safety subcommittee members there, and you can get some free bar top consultation from us, and we've got some real sharp guys and gals in the group. So please come on by for that, and we'll have beer from some renowned breweries who happen to be represented on the safety subcommittee as well. So, come down, let your hair down a little bit. You can give us your questions and just meet the group, and we'd love to talk to you. So without any further ado, let me introduce today's speaker for you, Dirk Laffler. Dirk's a technical director of Laffler Chemical Corporation. He's based in Atlanta. In his position, he's currently developing and implementing new sanitation programs and procedures. He's in charge of Laffler's safety program. If you've had the opportunity to read the BA Forum, Dirk's a frequent contributor on there and has some erudite answers on product safety when using brewery cleaning and sanitizing chemicals. So he's a frequent contributor there. He's been an active member of the BA since 93. Dirk's an interesting fellow. He came over from Germany in 1992 and is part of a third-generation family business. And he got a business degree in Cologne, Germany, and ever since the age of 15 has been working around brewery cleaning chemicals, and as he does to this day. So let's everybody give a warm welcome to our speaker, Dirk Laffler. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope everybody can hear me. All right. So first of all, thanks for coming today. It's actually nice to see so many faces. It shows that you guys are aware of safety and care about safety, which is always very, very good. So we're trying to keep this a little bit entertaining. It's a dry subject. OSHA is pretty much the driving factor, and we were just talking when I was coming in here. Over the past, I'd say, 5 years, we've seen more and more accidents in breweries, some fatal, a lot of forklift accidents lately, actually in the past few years, but also a lot of chemical-related accidents, explosion hazards, et cetera, et cetera. So OSHA has become aware of you guys, and they're making the rounds. So expect a knock on your door at some point from an OSHA representative, and they will want to see all the things that we're going to talk about here today in writing, ready to go when he walks in the door. If you don't have that, the way OSHA works, each and every single infraction is a single violation. So if you violate a confined space entry once a day, and you do it 365 days a year, that is 365 violations, each punishable by a few thousand dollars. You do the math on that one. All right, let's see if I can get the mouse figured out here. All right. So hazards are pretty much everywhere in a brewery. Today we focus on the HazCom primarily. Chemicals, of course, represent the danger in the brewery. May that be the famous, infamous non-caustic ones, which are still pretty hazardous, or you know, heavy-duty caustic cleaner. Tanks, drums, you know, whatever they come in. So the governing factor between HazCom and GHS TICE is part of HazCom. So just to go up front, HazCom, or the Hazard Communication Standard, is the main rule that we're going to be talking about. GHS, the Global Harmonized System, is a small part of HazCom. Okay, it ties into it, and we'll see in a second how it will do that. The HazCom standard, or we're going to call it HCS, is defined in 29 CFR, that's the Code of Federal Regulations, 1910-1200. Okay, it's really a very basic concept. It says essentially that every employee working with hazardous materials, or hazardous substances as they call it, has the right to know all the hazards of that chemical and be aware of it. And they're also supposed to know how they can protect themselves from the hazards. So it's really a system that's designed to communicate. That's why it's called a hazard communication standard. We're communicating hazards to you from a chemical supplier, you as an employer, to your employees. And the globalized system, the globalized harmonized system, the way OSHA describes it, it doesn't only give employees the right to know, it gives them now the right to understand. Let me take you up front. The HAZCOM standard is probably the most complex and the single most confusing standard of all OSHA standards, and there are no easy ones. It's also the second most cited one after fall protection. Okay, fall protection is the single largest cited one, and then HAZCOM is right behind it. If you think about how many construction companies are out there, how many scaffoldings, and how few hazard materials are out there, that kind of puts it in perspective. Like, HAZCOM is much more cited on an individual basis than anything else. It's very difficult to understand, so on top of that, to make it even more difficult, some states have their own standards. Okay, so there were actually 25 states currently that have their own state regulations. These state regulations supersede the federal regulations. Okay, that means if you're living in any one of these states, with the exception of Connecticut and New York, in those two states, you only have to have a state plan apply to you when you are a state or a local government employee. In these states, you need to pull the actual state plan and comply with the state plan. Generally, the state plans are more complex than the federal plans. So it's very important if you're in any of the states. What I'm talking about here today is all federal. There may be individual state requirements that are not covered by what we're talking here today. The first thing that happens when we're talking about HAZCOM is actually happens on our side as a chemical supplier. We have to make a hazard determination. So for each and every single chemical that is being shipped to you, may it be your printer ink for your inkjetter or your cleaning chemicals, prussic acid, anhydrous ammonia, whatever it may be, filter aid, DE, is a hazardous material. It causes cancer, or can cause cancer. We have to do a hazard determination. Okay, so what we're looking at is we're looking at physical and health hazards. Now, physical hazard, and it says it right here, I made this a little easier. A physical hazard can be a fire hazard, for example. So anything that is oxidizer, flammable liquid, flammable gas, flammable anything would be a physical hazard. There can be an explosion hazard, compressed gases, gas cylinders. You all use oxygen to oxygenate your yeast. So those are definitely covered and can be reactive hazards. Now we're talking organic peroxides like peracetic acid, for example. We also have health hazards. Anything corrosive, irritant, carcinogen, hopefully you don't have too many of those in there. Sensitizers, quaternary ammonium compounds is a sensitizer. And then the bottom ones, we probably don't have too many of those. Those are the ones that actually go directly to your nervous system, your bloodstream. If you look at all these requirements, pretty much every single chemical in your brewery is going to be covered by this at one way or the other. It's also very important to know when is a chemical dangerous. Now, DOT, for example, defines a hazardous substance very different than OSHA. So it's very important that we also differentiate, are we talking DOT, are we talking OSHA, are we talking EPA? They're very different definitions for the various hazards. We have also these here, not really applicable for breweries. You really don't find those there. When you go to a hospital, you probably find those. If you're in the microconductor business, you're going to find those things. So as a chemical manufacturer, we need to determine, is any of those hazards present? What do they mean to you? And then we have to put all the stuff more or less in writing. Okay, and the way that is done is through SDSs, labels, etc. Now, I want to stress something really important here. We talked about this a little earlier, and I got a lot of question marks faces, and I see this a lot. Now, HAZCOM, and it's a funny story, I was talking to another presenter here, to Joe, actually, who's going to present afterwards, so definitely stick around and listen to him, because he will actually tell you how to apply this directly to a brewery program. So very important, if you stay for this one, stay for the next one as well. But I talked to him, like, yeah, I talk about emergency response plans, and he's like, emergency response plan? I don't think we have one of those. I said, well, you need one. They said, but not in the HAZCOM. I said, no, but under a different OSHA rule. So very important there are other OSHA standards that tie into HAZCOM, okay? And if you read through the HAZCOM, just be prepared, get lots of sleep before you do that, you will see all these different standards referenced in there. For example, we have HAZWOPER, the Hazardous Waste Operations Emergency Response. If your employees or yourself do any chemical cleanup in the brewery, you have a spill, you address that spill, 1910.120 applies to you. Okay? You need to comply with that whole standard. 29 CFR 1910.38, emergency action plans. What's an emergency action plan? How do you evacuate the brewery? In case of a really severe emergency, you need to have that in place. An emergency response plan goes a little bit deeper than that. It also addresses chemical response, how to alert systems. We'll get this a little bit later. Obviously, when we're talking about evacuation, now we're also having 36 and 37, design and construction requirements for exit routes, as well as maintenance, safeguards, and operational feature for exit routes. That means don't put a pallet in front of the emergency exit. Famous example, we used to be in our previous facility. Our landlord had a tendency to put a giant stack of pallets in front of our second emergency exit. So we opened the door and like, we're not getting out that way. Very, very important. Employee alarm systems, same thing. By OSHA, you're required to have a system in place that alerts employees to certain hazards. And anybody who's ever been on a cruise is a great example. What are they going to make you the first day? They're going to take you on a drill. And they're going to take you through that whole drill. You know what they're doing? They're exercising their emergency response plan with you, their new employees, for the next few days. That's what they're really doing. And as long as you're on American waters, the Coast Guard requires you to do this because now you're under OSHA standards. Okay? This may not apply for many of you, but if you're a larger brewery and you have DX systems that use anhydrous ammonia, there's a whole standard just for that. You know, and for example, if you walk into an AB brewery, for example, or Miller brewery as a contractor, the first day when you walk in there, they make you go through a 3-4 hour safety seminar where you learn all the different alarms, what to do when an alarm sounds, where the areas are where you're supposed to go to when the alarm sounds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, keep in mind when you guys have tours, for example, in your facility, you know, you really, before you start a tour, you want to address all the people that on the tour, hey, if you hear this alarm, that means this, we're all going to go that way. Very, very important. So the design is fairly simple. The implementation, much more complicated so. Essentially means every chemical manufacturer, importer, or distributor, not so much there, but you know, must have an evaluation in place for any hazardous substance that they have or import. When you have this, you got to put it into writing. That's safety data sheets. Used to be MSDS. It's from this point on forward, it's going to be referred to as safety data sheet. Just a little change in the way it's called. It has to do with the GHS. We also need to put labels on the container. So hazard communication means exactly that. We are communicating hazards to you, the user. Very, very simple system, really. Now, this is supposed to be happening automatically. So when you buy a chemical, theoretically, your vendor should send you automatically the SDS that goes with that chemical. So you really shouldn't have to call that vendor. We're probably as guilty every once in a while. Things just slip through the cracks and we just forget to do it. So, you know, definitely it's a good idea if you follow this. Do a frequent inventory of your safety data sheets and MSDSs. And if anything is missing, give us a call. We'll email it to you. We'll send it to you. You know, whatever you need. Now, keep in mind, this rule stays in effect when the chemicals are in your brewery. If you pour something from a drum into a bucket, that bucket needs to be labeled, tagged, or marked. Like, everybody needs to know what's in that jug. If you put that jug of caustic next to the 1 gallon jugs of the water during the summertime, and you don't put on their caustic, it looks clear, it looks colorless, somebody might just grab the wrong jug, and these things actually happen. The SDS must be properly formatted. This is a new thing now. It didn't used to be that way. We just had to communicate it to new. We'll learn a second. GHS now tells us it has to be in a very specific format. Very important that the SDS has to be updated. Now, I tell my guys, as a general rule, if you come across any safety data sheets that are older than 3 years, I'd say get a new one. Because there are revisions, rules change, regulations change, formulations change. So it's, generally, it's a good idea to have an MSDS or SDS that is at least, you know, at a maximum 3 years old. Should be 1-2 years ideally. Now the good news is there's some good news. OSHA says you can rely on our information. There's no responsibility for you to verify any of those informations that we give to you. This can be good and bad. That's what I would say. Make sure you have a reputable chemical vendor. Some of the guys out there are a little fly by night, and they don't really communicate information very well. So it's very important that you go with a reputable vendor that you can trust, because that information on the data sheet may be wrong. Okay. So how are hazards really communicated? So you know, we talked about the safety data sheet. Product labels are definitely a big one. But you know, even things that don't really have to do with OSHA, like DOT labels and placards, other signs, and even any other means of communication, you know, are also covered on this one. You know, the label generally, you know, it tells you what it is, what the name is. You know, it tells you the main danger things. You may or may not have this on the label. It gives you some, you know, precautionary statements, first aid, handling and storage. You know, what to do in case of a spill or leak. You know, those things you normally find on a label. DOT makes it easy for you. You know, this is toxic. You know, this is corrosive. This is an oxidizer. You know, this is a flammable liquid. So it doesn't tell you a whole lot, but it gives you, you know, hey, this is dangerous. It's nice, so you know it. Now, I stress this, you know, products may be hazardous to humans even though they're not labeled as such. Okay, my favorite example, non-caustic cleaners. Okay, DOT says if it's less than 30% sodium metasilicate, you don't have to have a corrosive label on the drum. They're only worried about the trucks. They're not worried about you. DOT doesn't care about human exposure. DOT cares about transportation. If you buy a bag of metasilicate, it's got a big corrosive sticker on it. That is still corrosive to humans and to human skin. So very important that, you know, this may not necessarily mean that the chemical is not hazardous to you upon exposure. Very, very important. A very new thing now are pictograms. That is part of the GHS. Pictograms, we have 9 actually, where OSHA actually only implemented 8 of them. Ironically, I always find it's ironious, that's why I always laugh when people say that this is undeveloped land. In Germany, we call it nature. ironically, OSHA did not implement the environmental hazard. So the other ones are all mandatory, this one's actually non-mandatory. You know, this is the new pictograms that are going to be on your labels, on your SDSs, etc. And this will pretty much replace more and more some of the other signs and pictures that you're used to. You know, we also have like HMIS, you know, Hazard Materials Identification System, the National Fire Protection Agency. You know, those are all good signs. It's good to know what they mean and where they're coming from. And again, we have other labels. Now, we as a chemical manufacturer believe in that you know as much as you can about chemicals. So, you know, you might see this one, like anhydrous ammonia needs to have this label on a tank. Carbon dioxide is a very dangerous chemical. It can suffocate you. You know, keep away from heat, you know, keep from freezing, reportable commodity. You know, this is something that you have to report to the government. You spill it, you're required by law to report it. Now, this is a good time to kind of talk about how the hazard communication system and GHS kind of tie in together. GHS is part of HAZCOM, as I said before. It's not an individual standard, but it is now part of the HAZCOM standard. And again, as I said before, OSHA looks at this as making it easier for an employee to understand the hazard communication. And I do agree with it for, you know, a little bit. Now, this is a very, very important slide. This is your checklist for compliance with HCS and GHS. Okay, every one of these check marks you need to go through. Okay, you want to get a copy of the new standard. You can buy these on a variety of different sources. There are a lot of government publication stores online where you can get those in. It's about a booklet that's about this big, you know, letter size format. You want to have a standard on site. Okay, definitely. You want to read, unfortunately, the requirements of the standard. This is very painful, so let me warn you. Fortunately, I have my wife, who's an attorney, who does it for me. It's a great thing to have. If you're not as lucky, drink lots of coffee. It'll put you to sleep in no time. very important, and this is kind of new. this is now a new requirement under the GHS. you need to prepare a chemical inventory. Okay? You need to take an inventory of every single hazardous substance on site. You need to know what is on site and how much is on site and where it is stored. You need to put that in writing. Okay? And you need to update this on a regular basis. Okay, this is very important. When OSHA walks in your door, they want to see this. It's one of the first things they're going to ask you for. Because it tells them where to look for possible violations. Equally important, you're required by law under OSHA to have an MSDS or SDS for every single hazardous material on site on file. The exemption are cleaners that are used for bathroom cleaning, toilet cleaning, etc. So if it's something that's used for environmental cleaning, you don't necessarily have to have an MSDS. If it's used in the industrial site, okay, very important, you need to have an SDS for each and every single chemical. Now, we'll go over it a little bit. There's a slow implementation progress in place. We're getting a lot of calls right now saying we need SDSs for all the chemicals, like tomorrow. I say, well, no, you don't. You have until June 2015, okay, to convert everything from MSDS to SDS. In the meantime, both are valid. So if OSHA comes in tomorrow and you show them MSDSs and SDSs side by side, they're going to be very happy. Okay, so you don't need to have SDSs yet. Review and develop a written HAZCOM plan. Now, a HAZCOM plan is really not difficult. It sounds difficult than it is. A HAZCOM plan means that everything you do under the HAZCOM regulations needs to be put in writing. Okay, who is responsible for obtaining and updating the MSDSs? Who is responsible and updating the chemical inventory? Who is my emergency response guy? Who is my spill response guy? You know, who's in charge of evacuating the brewery? Blah, 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 blah. This can be a very, very simple plan, but they want to see it. So you don't have to overcomplicate that, but the HAZCOM plan has to be in writing. So it can be 2 pages. If you do it very nicely in 2 pages, you have a perfectly good HAZCOM plan in place, okay? This is not the emergency response plan. This is just a HAZCOM plan. Very important, and I can stress this enough, assign responsibilities for the various HAZCOM tasks. And I would say you want to assign responsibility, okay? If you don't assign responsibility, nobody will feel responsible. As a result, it doesn't get done. Very, very simple. Applies for everything in the brewery. Grab a guy who you know is very good with paper, assign him to do the SDSs and the MSDSs, keep him in a folder, keep him updated, you know, do the chemical inventory, et cetera. So really, and again, this has to be in your HAZCOM plan. There need to be names in there who is doing this for you, okay? Ensure all containers are labeled. Now, sometimes in transportation, labels are coming off the drums, okay? It's a good idea from your chemical vendor, and we do this frequently for our guys, to have a couple of extra labels on site. So when a drum comes in, the label's been ripped off by the tracking company, you know, by the batch number of the drum, we can tell you which chemical it is, and you can put a new label on the drum, and now we're in full compliance again. So, you know, that's a good thing to have. But every container has to be labeled, tagged, or marked. It doesn't have to be a fancy label. If the container is very small, a 1 gallon jug, you can have like little tags on them. That's compliant. Okay? And we, for example, supply them free of charge to our customers. They're like little business card size, and they come with like a little plastic string. You can put them around the handle. That's completely compliant right there. Conduct worker training. Very important. You have to have guys that are trained in medical response. You have to have guys that are trained in spill response. You have to have guys that are trained in evacuating the brewery. You can't just say, let's evacuate the brewery, and then everybody's going like, okay, who's doing that? Like, you know, you really want to define this up front. And actually, there was an interesting post on the Brewers Forum not too long ago. I don't remember who it was. They had a spill. They had to evacuate the brewery, and it was a complete, you know, cluster mess. Everything went wrong. Nobody knew what to do, and they said they came out afterwards, and we're going to learn this in a little bit. You know, their plan really wasn't working the way they had written them down. Nobody really knew what to do, so they were saying, we're going to go back now and redefine all these responsibilities and all these plans and make sure that we know what we're doing next time around. Equally important, you guys noticed under the Right to Know Act, maybe still, the SARA Title III Right to Know Act, that was the predecessor to HAZCOM. The MSDSs have to be made available not only to all workers, but anybody and everybody who enters your facility has the right to ask for any SDS of any chemical in your facility. It's a great way to get competitors' information, I'm telling you. Important, they have to be kept up to date. So as I said earlier, you know, if you have a 10-year-old SDS, you know, it might be time to call a vendor and get an updated one. You know, if the chemical's still on site, and actually you have to keep the SDS for up to 5 years after the chemical was the last time on site. So there's not only like once the chemical is gone, we don't need the SDS anymore. You have to keep the SDS for 5 years afterwards. Okay, very, 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 very important. Again, very important too, establish procedures to revise and update the written program. If you find out through one reason or the other that some parts of your HazCom program are not working, revise them, change them, document your changes. Okay, very, very important. OSHA will want to see this. It's a good idea to evaluate the effectiveness of the program, and the best way to do this is run through a drill. If you write something up, an evacuation plan, hey, run an evacuation drill in your brewery, and you quickly see how bad things really are. Again, cruise ship is the best example. The first day on a cruise ship, they'll run you through a fire drill. You know, it's a good idea to do this. It's just good practice. It keeps the employees sharp. They know what to do. They know where to go. You know, and you can address these things in a non-emergency situation before they really have to get out and nobody knows what to do. So it's good to catch these things up front before they actually get bad. And again, we said, you know, review if other standards apply to you directly or indirectly, some of the ones we just talked about. So the things that really change are really three things. The SDS, the labeling, and you have to have an emergency response plan now. Okay, this is very important. So the SDS really, you know, the HazCom standard doesn't really change by itself. We have HazCom 1994 is the old one, HazCom 2012 is the new one. So there really are not that many changes. GHS has just been added to it. Okay, so that's the good news. If you're familiar with HazCom already, it hasn't changed all that much. The current standard kind of tells you what needs to be on the MSDS, but it doesn't give you really a standard on how to do it. And you probably notice that when you get MSDSs, some are 2 pages long, some are 12 pages long. You know, some have the reactivity on you know section 2, some have it on section 12. You know, in the new standard, every SDS looks the same. And that makes it easy for you. You know exactly where to look. So that's what I'm saying. It makes it actually all easier for you. This is the new standard, essentially. So these are the 16 required section. Okay, you can add additional information to this under 16 if you feel it is prevalent or needs to be communicated. But every MSDS from now on forward, or SDS, more importantly, has to be in this chronological order. Makes it easy for you. You know exactly where to look, and you know section 9 is always physical and chemical properties. New labeling requirements. How is the labeling gonna change? The reason why you haven't seen too many new labels yet, the hazard determination is a pain in the batukis for us chemical manufacturers. It is a complex, long process that will keep two of us busy for a whole year. I kid you not. We have to more or less look at every single chemical again based on the new HazCom GHS and redefine each individual's chemical's hazards under the new regulations, and that is complex. So I think now we have one SDS, one new SDS, and one new label so far. Okay, and the effect has been in effect since December. So, I mean, we're really going to be struggling to get this thing done by June 2015. I mean, it's going to keep two of us busy all year. It's really crazy. Good for you guys, it'll be a lot clearer afterwards. It's going to be easier for you to understand the labels. So again, once the hazard classification is completed, that's our job, okay? The standard specifies, what is to be provided for each hazard class, and we have now pictograms. We saw those earlier, those new labelings. Do I have them again? Yep, here they are. So our pictograms are going to be the new, pretty much, this will tell you in one symbol what's up with this chemical. Now this year, anything corrosive, irritant, sensitizing to your skin, et cetera, et cetera. So caustics, acids, you know, this kind of thing will have this mark on it from this point on forward. Flammables, you have this one. If anything is really bad for your lungs, you know, we have some chemicals, hydrochloric acid, nitric acid. You know, when you inhale those in, you can get lung edema from those. You can get, you know, severe respiratory tract irritation from it. You know, you might find this one as well. You may find all these next to each other, okay? Now, corrosion, again, you may find this one and this one actually on the same label, okay? This one is less severe than this one, but, you know, if it is irritant and corrosive, we have to put both of these on the label now. Exploding bomb, you know, organic peroxides, anything self-reactive. You know, you probably don't use too many self-reactive products, but, you know, sodium, for example, sodium with water gets great fireworks if you ever had, you know, a chemistry class in school. but organic peroxides, keep in mind, you know, those can be very bad when they get heated too high, et cetera, et cetera. Signal words, that's also a new one. Kind of been there already. If you're familiar with EPA labels, you actually already know these because the EPA already has this in place. But now the OSHA under GHS, you know, kind of adopted the same thing. We have danger and warning. Danger obviously means a more severe hazard than warning. You have to have a hazard statement in place. You know, and the way this is going to go forward is they're actually standardized. So you actually pick from a list of hazard statements that are already pre-printed for you. So it makes it very easy. They're all going to be the same. So it's very easy to understand the various things that we're trying to communicate to you. Precautionary statements is the same thing. You know, we have predetermined phrases that we use that are going to be used. Now, a new GHS label will look something like this here. So we have, you know, the product name, which is mandatory. Here's your signal word. Here's you know, one of those hazard phrases, precautionary phrases. You know, we have the company name has to be on there. And the pictograms. So that's going to be the minimum requirements for a new GHS-compliant label. Now, in a way, we really already have this. Okay, so if you look at the same label that we currently have on your drum, except for the pictograms, actually, every single requirement is already on there. So, you know, it doesn't really change all that much. It's going to be a new format. It's going to be easier to communicate. And again, the actual statements may vary a little bit because they're now standardized. We talked about the gradual implementation, so everybody here in this room who is an employer should have taught his employees by December 1st on the pictograms, the new labeling requirements, and the new SDS format. Okay? If you haven't done it yet, then you need to update quickly your HAZCOM training because that was a requirement. Okay? Even if your employees were HAZCOM trained, you still had to train them on these few requirements. Now, by June 1st next year, you really have to comply with the majority of the rules, except some of us chemical distributors don't have to comply until June 1st, 2016, because you may have labels or products in the inventory that move very, very slowly, and it takes a little bit longer for them to get out of inventory. Now, as I said this earlier, in the meantime, until this goes in effect, it's okay to have both MSDSs and SDSs on file. It's okay to have both non-compliant and compliant labels on the drums. It gets a little more entertaining in a second, I promise. We're just doing the basics. Yeah. Emergency response plans. Okay, so every brewery should have an emergency response plan or an emergency action plan. Okay, each brewery should have a spill response plan in place. All different requirements. Now, an emergency response plan is essentially a plan that should be anticipating emergencies prior to commencement. That means you should have a plan before something actually happens. Okay, that means how do I evacuate the brewery if necessary? How do I go about addressing medical emergencies? Who's going to be doing the medical emergency? You know, do you have somebody on staff who went through first aid training, who knows how to use a defibrillator? Yeah. Important is the plan shall be in writing and available for inspection. So, again, if OSHA comes in, the first thing they want to see is all your written plans. And then they're going to take those plans and see, are you actually implementing those written plans? So it's a natural succession. Now, there is one exception when you don't need an emergency response plan. And that is if your employees, and I said this earlier, never ever address any hazardous situation in the brewery. All you do is, if something's going on, you evacuate the brewery. Then all you need to have in place is an emergency action plan. And all this is, essentially, is an evacuation plan for your brewery. Okay? Now, if you have a plan on addressing a chemical spill, a cleanup, a medical emergency, then, sorry, that's not going to do it for you. You need an emergency response plan. Okay? So in reality, this applies for very, very few people. Yeah, so we need an emergency action plan. And here again, it says it one more time, the regulations actually, you know, you're automatically covered by 1910.120, you know, section A and Q, and that's the Haswapper regulations. So the second you touch anything that's built, this OSHA standard applies to you. Sorry, that's not going to do it for you. Now it should be a facility-specific plan. So don't get one from a fellow brewmaster that you know that already has one and put it in your shelf, because chances are your brewery has a different layout, you have different equipment, you have different chemicals, different hazards. You know, so it needs to be a facility-specific plan, and it shall be implemented whenever there's a fire, explosion, or release of a hazardous substance that threatens human health or the environment. You know, if you think you guys never have a fire, you know. There was a brewery a few years ago in the Midwest that burned down to the ground. Those things happen. You know, we have a chemical vendor of ours. Their building burned down to the ground. There was nothing left. You know, those things happen. I mean, you really need to be prepared for it. Grain dust explosions, you know, electrical shortcuts. I mean, it's so easy to get a fire in a brewery, you know, that you really need to be prepared for this. you know, very important. Well, it shall be reviewed and immediately amended, and this goes back to the form submission, you know, if the plan fails in an emergency. You know, your plan, you try to implement it, and it was a complete disaster. You know, nothing really worked out the way you thought it would. Feels like me coming home with our twin boys from the hospital. We had everything all figured out in the nursery. We work in, it's like, yeah, that's not going to work. So, you know, you really need to be prepared. Again, especially for a grown brewery, your facility constantly changes. You're adding on tanks, you're adding on buildings, you're adding on, you know, new equipment. You start using different chemicals or so. So really, you need to constantly update your emergency response plan with, you know, as your brewery grows. It needs to have a list of emergency contacts in there. Okay, so if you have some personnel changes and one of those guys was in there, you know, you need to immediately address the personnel change. Some of the training that's required under the emergency response plan, okay, it's very important and often overlooked, emergency escape procedures and emergency escape routes. if you guys have worked in an industrial facility, you see those plans on the walls that have the emergency escape routes on there. You really want to have those in your brewery, and they should be publicly posted, okay? And they should be readily available for people to look at. If you have an emergency, somebody dies in a brewery, you don't have these things posted, OSHA will find the hell out of you. That's the last day you brewed beer, I promise you. That facility will be closed down. The $1 million fines. So, you know, very, very important that you have, at the very least, a good plan to get people out of the facility, because that's number one. Then you're safe. People can get out. That's a good thing. Now, this is also a very, very big one here, and I can tell you, this is actually very difficult if you think about it. How do I account for everybody in the brewery when there is an emergency? Are you guys doing roll call in the morning? You know, do you have a sign-in board? You know, how do you know that Jim came to work today? You know, maybe he may be half an hour late. The facility burned down. You think he's in there. The fire department spends half a day looking for him, but then he calls from home and says, "Oh yeah, I was a little late this morning." So you really got to have some kind of means to keep track of who is in the building at any given time. We have a little board at the entrance where, you know, the in and out boards with all the names beside it, and we really stress to everybody, you know, when you get in and you walk out, you know, we really need you to update that board, you know, because if the plane's burned down, we don't want to be digging in the back for your body when you're down the street drinking a beer. macabre. Identifying personnel designated to perform rescue and medical duties. Okay, under OSHA, you are actually required by law to designate people to perform rescue and medical duties. Not anybody can go in there and resuscitate the person that had a heart attack. Okay. Now, while you really want to do that, okay, better than nothing, you know, in an industrial environment, you need to have somebody or several people dedicated that are trained to do that. Yeah. I know John Mallett said in a speech last year, they have the automatic defibrillators in their facility to resuscitate people with a heart attack. You know, it says actually on the bottom of the things, for trained personnel only. You know, not just anybody can do that. You know, you don't want to be that guy. It's like, you know, this should not be your emergency response plan with a big panic and everybody going around, what am I going to do? So again, very important, account for all employees. You know, ensure everybody's accounted for, have designated meeting areas where people are go to when they evacuate the brewery. You know, that should not be right next to the building. That should be far enough away so if there is a fire, an explosion, or, you know, any release danger, that, you know, that is far enough away so nobody gets hurt. You know, maybe do a roll call in the morning. You know, it seems silly, but really, you know, how do you know that everybody is there? You know, important even for offices, you know, how do you know everybody's in there? You know, when somebody walks away from their workstation, have them quickly check with the supervisor, hey, I'm going to run down the street, go get some office supplies, I'll be back in half an hour. You know, that person will know when he walks out, well, no, he left 10 minutes ago to get some office supplies, he's not in the building. You know, rescue and medical duties. Again, we talked about the resuscitators. You know, there's a big sign here, trained personnel only. You know, not everybody is allowed to zap you. You need to know how to do that. You know, rescue duties, you know, how to do first aid. So it's a good idea to have at least one or two guys in your brewery that have a solid first aid course. Okay, can be the owner, you know, if you're there every day. It can be you. It can be one of your supervisors, one of your managers. But you got to have people trained. You know, you want to have some kind of reporting system in place. You know, how do I communicate a fire alarm to the fire department? You know, what if my phone system is out of service? You know, so, you know, pull alarms are a good idea. They're generally independent. Automatic alarms, you know, phone calls, have some kind of system in place. You know, very important when there's an alarm, you know, evacuate or perform your assigned emergency actions. And again, we talked about the different types of alarm signals. It's a good idea to have a dedicated alarm signal for each individual alarm. You know, is this a release of ammonia? Is this a, you know, a fire? Is this, you know, a explosion hazard? You know, a tank is overpressurized and about to blow up. You know, those things all happen. You know, very, very important, packaging halls. Very low decibel levels. Okay, you are most likely not going to hear an emergency alarm. So it's a very good idea to have visual alerts in place on top of the actual audible alerts. The same thing when you have employees who are hearing impaired, okay? You want to make sure that everybody can hear the alarm. So if there's a hearing impaired employee, you know, you need to make sure that he has a flashing light nearby that alerts him that there's an alarm. If you go to the hotels, for example, there's always an audible alarm and there's a flashing alert because, you know, people who can't hear, doesn't do much good if you have an alarm going off and they can't hear it. It's a good idea to tie the alarm system to an auxiliary power source. Just get a plain old UPS for the computer, the uninterruptible power supply. Tie it in so you'll still be able to use your communication system even though the power's down. You know, it could be a fire in your electrical panel. Personal protective equipment ties into the HAZCOM. So HAZCOM says you have to provide your employees with personal protective equipment. And there's a lot of, I think, misunderstanding is what's required, what you're supposed to do. So I want to quickly talk about that. Again, OSHA says the best way to protect employees is controlling a hazard at its source. That means whenever you use with it, you know, you want to be able to deal with it in the best way. And OSHA says you can use engineering or work practices to control, manage, or eliminate hazards to the greatest extent possible. So that means for you, you always want to really design working with chemicals so that it is the least hazardous to your employees. When you can automate something, automate it. You know, when you can automate it, provide PPE so people can get exposed. Very, very simple. So, you know, like building a barrier between the hazard and employee is an engineering control. You know, like what we do a lot, we have dispensing panels. We put a wall in between. The pumps are on this side. The dispensing is on this side. If we have a leak on the pump, people don't get sprayed with chemical. So that's just a very good idea. Build a case around it. Put it in an enclosure. You know, that's a good engineering control. You know, changing the way an employee performs its work is a practice control. Again, automation, just safer procedures. You know, just make sure don't do this, don't do that. That's a good procedure. Now, if you really can ensure that employee is going to be safe, then the employer must provide PPE to their employees, and you're also required to ensure its use. So if there's a case with safety glasses and everybody in the brewery runs around without safety glasses, you know, it doesn't really work. I come down to my house pretty hard if I see them working on the plant without safety glasses. I say, you got the glasses, use them, because the one time you don't use them, you're going to get stuff in your eyes. It always happens that way. you know, It's good to remember it's really PPE is a cooperative effort of both employer and employees. So as an employer, you provide the PPE. As an employee, really do your employer a favor and wear the PPE. We're going through a lot of expenses and a lot of effort to get you that equipment and trying to keep you safe. If you're not wearing it, you know, really you're working against us trying to provide you with actually a safe working environment. So, you know, it's really important that we stress our employees, you know, really not doing yourself and me a favor by not wearing your PPE, because when you get burned or, you know, or have some other danger, you know, why? It was all there. You know, all you had to do was wear it. So as an employer, you want to do a hazard assessment. Okay, that's step number one. Now, this is now you, the brewery, has to do that. Now, where are the dangers? What are the dangers? How can I address the danger? Now, here I might have an eye exposure because, you know, somebody's pouring chemical groups from a drum into a bucket. You know, that could splash, stuff may get into my eye. So here the hazard assessment would be there's going to be a splash hazard and there's going to be a spill hazard potentially, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Now, once you've done that, you know, you want to identify and provide appropriate PPE for employees. You know, I would say, like, a pair of regular safety goggles, you know, will really not do you any good. You need to have splash goggles to protect yourself from liquid exposure, because the liquid will get behind the glasses. You know, regular safety glasses are for physical hazards, like glass shards or, you know, splinters or something. You know, splash goggles are for liquid hazards. Very, very important that we differentiate. You need to train your employee in the use and care of the PPE. Just handing it to your employee and say, here's your PPE, have a nice day, doesn't cut it, okay? Especially important with respirators. Those are sometimes very complicated to operate and to put on. You know, and any specialized gear. You know, you really need to train your employees on how to properly use the PPE. It's very, very important. Maintaining PPE, you know, it's like a glove with a big hole inside it. It's not going to protect you. So, you know, it's good. Teach your employees, you know, like it's okay to come to you and get a new pair of gloves. You know, that is much more important than you exposing yourself to potentially corrosive chemicals. And again, very important, periodically reviewing, updating, and evaluating the effectiveness of the PPE program. What works very well here, I don't know if you guys do this, you're required to, near-miss reports. You actually required, if there's a near-miss, your employer is supposed to come to you and it's like, well, I almost burnt myself with this chemical because this and this and this happened. Okay, they're supposed to document this, and it's supposed to help you to come up with a procedure for this almost accident not to happen almost again next time. Okay. And again, employers are really supposed to fill out, you know, every time there's a spill occurring or an exposure occurring. You really, if you document this, you'll quickly notice a trend in a certain area. You can address it, and then it's not going to be an issue anymore. So again, we talked about wearing PPE. You know, really, you know, we always say this, like, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of fascinating. You have a training seminar for PPE, and half the people stay away. It's like, you know, really, it's like, you know, this is your safety we're talking about here. So, you know, when they're training sessions on PPE, you really want to be there. And I would make it as an employer mandatory. Like, you're not there, I'm going to sign you up. You just took a day vacation. Sorry. very, very important, care for, clean, maintaining PPE. You know, some of the PPE really needs routine maintenance. Respirators, for example. Okay, there are a couple OSHA things we're not going to get into this here right now. that require to provide certain PPE. But again, we're going to... We talked about the hazard assessment here, so we can skip that one. You know, so when the walkthrough is complete, you know, organize, analyze the data, and actually you're supposed to write all the stuff down. What did I find? Where are my hazards? Okay, what hazards are present? That all needs to be in writing. You need to define who did the hazard assessment and what did I find. Okay, again, OSHA will want to see this when they come into your facility. it's generally a good idea when you're determined, well, I need this minimum protection, maybe go one step above. So it happens when you live in Georgia and you come to Denver. High humidity, low humidity, your voice goes boop. So you really want to add like one level of protection above the minimum required. It's good for your employees. I mean, I was looking at it this way. Your employees are your most valuable asset. They're the ones who keep the brewery running. They're the ones who make the beer for you. They're the ones who keep the place running. They're the ones who provide you with a paycheck. You really want to take good care of them. And the way to take good care of them, provide them with the best PPE possible. Okay. If there's an equipment for $2 and $5 and the one for $5 is better, get the one for $5. That's just a good rule. Now, we talked about, you know, you want to periodically reassess for any changes of conditions, equipment, or operating procedures. Very important in a fast-growing industry like ours here. You know, breweries grow rapidly. I mean, we have some breweries that grow 100-200% every year. You know, things change so rapidly. You really want to keep up with the PPE, equipment, procedures, etc. Frequently reassess those. Again, all in writing, please. And then, you know, again, a good thing is to review injury, illness, or near miss records to see is there a trend somewhere, you know, where we're going and what can we do. yeah, we pretty much have that one. Again, just, you know, one more time, you know, identify the workplace evaluated, you know, this brewery, the name of the person who conducted the assessment needs to be on the report. When this assessment was done, you know, chances are if you did an assessment 10 years ago and you've grown by 200,000 barrels since then, OSHA comes in and say, well, you really should have done that, you know, probably a few more times since then. You know, and again, identifying the documents to define completion of the hazard assessment, very important. you know, just some basic things about PPE, should be safe design construction, kind of makes sense, maintained, you know. Very important is this factor here, and I can't stress this enough. If you provide your employees with PPE that doesn't fit well, they're not going to wear it, okay? And equally important is when you put several different pieces of PPE together, like you have one guy who has to go in a tank frequently and, you know, scrub the tank manually, and he's completely exposed. So chances are he's going to have a suit, he's going to have gloves, he's going to have boots, and they're often different manufacturers. They really need to kind of work together. So you need to make sure that you provide various PPEs that kind of harmonically work together and provide a complete, you know, protection for everybody that's in there. Kind of did that one, you know. Yeah, employees, again, one more time to stress this, must be trained to know at least when PPE is necessary, what PPE is necessary, how to properly put it on, take it off, adjust or wear it. What are the limitations? Respirator, okay? One respirator does not protect you from everything. You need to know this is a DE respirator, okay, that does not protect you against peroxide gas and vapors. Very, very important. And again, equally important, proper care, maintenance, use for life, and disposal of PPE. Now, some PPE, there's an expiration on it. When that's expired, you must discard it. Okay, very, very important. I'm going to skip through it. We're going to run short on time here. Safety showers. Quick thing about safety showers. We actually run a lot into this, and we recently had a customer who actually got fined by OSHA. And ironically, he got fined the way we write our MSDSs. It's kind of funny. Now, OSHA says you only need to have a suitable facility for quick drenching or flushing of the ice. Now, that can be a hose. That can be a hose with a shutoff valve laying right there. And we say you need to have a safety shower. So OSHA fined our customer because they had a hose there, but no safety shower. And then they came to us and said, well, can you rewrite your MSDS so we don't get fined? I say, no, we're not going to do that. But I want you to think about something. What would you like to have there if you're the one working with the chemicals? Would you have a hose or would you have a safety shower? And the reason why I'm saying this, hoses have a tendency to disappear. You put that hose there, somebody else needs it, they're going to grab the hose while you're around the corner, you come back, you get exposed, that hose is no longer there. Okay. The safety shower is fixed. You can't take it away. And plus, you know the location of the safety shower all the time because it's a standard fixed piece of equipment. Another thing, too, when you get chemicals in your eyes, you can't see. You're lucky if you can stumble to the safety shower and do this. And that's all you really want to be doing. So ask yourself, you know, do I want the most safe piece of equipment or do I just want to have the required piece of equipment? And this goes back to what I said earlier. It may be worthwhile going one step beyond. Safety showers are expensive, but trust me, they're all worthwhile, every single penny you spend on it. A good thing is the 10-second unobstructed walk and run rule. You want to get within 10 seconds to a safety shower. If it takes much longer than that, you're probably going to be in trouble. Now, a quick poll in the room here. I love this one. So, I wear my pants tucked into my boots. I wear my pants over my boots. I usually wear shorts, not an issue. What boots? I wear sandals or athletic shoes. Now, honestly, who here wears their boots tucked into their shoes? Only one hand. Come on, I'm not buying this. Two hands. Who wears their boots tucked into their shoes? Like, if your pants tucked into your boots, sorry. Yeah. All right. Why don't you want to do that? even when you don't use chemicals. If you ever had a boil over and hot, burning hot water gets into your boots, your feet will swell so quickly they have to cut you out of those boots. There's no way in hell you're going to get these boots off your feet. And every single second you're in there, your feet are exposed to 220 boiling water. You will have third-degree burns no matter what you do. Always want to wear your pants over your boots. It will deflect the water away from the inside of your boots, and you won't get chemicals in there or boiling water. Trust any brewer who ever had a boil-over incident. This is one lesson to learn. Long pants over your boots. Shorts and sandals have no business in the brewery. This is an industrial workplace. Sorry, guys. I know it's a craft brewing industry, but you know, safety is what we're talking about here. The fire guys tell us how to do it. One quick thing about chemical storage. Again, all ties into HAZCOM. You really want to have a secondary containment for any and all chemicals in your facility. EPA says you have to. You really want to kind of separate those, you know, make sure that you don't have chlorine and acid on the same containment pallet. Because the way it generally works is the forklift always hits both containers at the same time, and they mix, and then you have a nice little cloud of chlorine gas in your brewery. It doesn't make for a good day at the job. One of the most cited things in the brewery with chemical storage is gas cylinders. Okay, every single gas cylinder should have one of these on there, showing the current status of the gas cylinder. OSHA will find you the yin-yang for these violations because these become rockets that go through walls when they fall over and they're full. So they have these nice little stickers. As you go through the life cycle of a bottle, you just tear one off, in service, empty, and then you're done. So very, very handy. Now, this is one thing I also like to address. This is very confusing, and hopefully I can make this very, very simple. When you buy containment spill pallets, okay, there's a very simple rule. That's the EPA now, not OSHA, but OSHA says you got to apply to this rule here. So again, indirect thing. A containment system must hold 10% of the volume of every single container on the pallet or 100% of the largest container. So example at hand, 10 5-gallon pails, right? 10% of 50 gallons is 5 gallons. The largest 5-gallon pail is 5 gallons, so 5 gallons would be sufficient. Okay, you put a 30-gallon drum on that pallet, that needs to hold 30 gallons. You put a 55-gallon drum on it, it needs to hold 55 gallons. You put a tote on it, it has to hold actually whatever it is, 330 or whatever gallons. So very, very important. So when you buy secondary containments, you know, keep your growth in mind. You start with 5-gallon pails, but you probably, you know, as you get bigger, you're going to buy 30-gallon drums, 55-gallon drums. And actually, the pricing from a smaller to a bigger pallet is not that much. So get the bigger ones and be in compliance. They come in different flavors, you know. Spill response, really quickly, we're going to kind of run through this here. I'm running out of time. You know, again, have a spill response plan in place. OSHA says you have to have one in place, okay? Keep in mind, when you do a spill response plan, you may have a different response to a 5-gallon pail or to a 330-gallon tote, okay? So even though it's the same chemical, there may be different approaches to a spill depending on the container size. Very important. Okay, and again, you know, equally important, if you don't have your own neutralization system, you know, you need to take some kind of measurements, and they need to be in place before it happens, to either close drains that go to like storm drains, for example, that go straight to rivers, etc. You know, you really want to have a whole tote of peracetic acid. Oops, sorry about that. I should not be on. Sorry. That's embarrassing. Develop a spill response plan. We talked about the different set of containers. Again, here, like with everything else, perform regular training exercises with your staff. Train how to address an emergency. Again, you want regular evacuations exercises with your staff. You know, especially important when you have tours in your brewery. I can't stress this enough. You know, if you have frequently tours going through a brewery, you really got to have an emergency response plan in place, like how to get people out of the brewery. You know, have a plan, execute the plan. One more time, the summary here, yeah, what you need to do, work closely with your chemical supplier. We can help you assign responsibilities. It's the last slide. Remember, HAZCOM is the most cited standard of all OSHA standards, so really, they're going to come looking for this, and they're going to find you on this. compliance is safety. Safety means a safe and sustainable work environment. That's what we all want. Thank you very much.